you know, shyness is like a snowball and it just keeps building on itself over the years. And I just remember at the time, I just like took my head and I did not express my anger anywhere else. I just took my head and I like pounded it against the wall.
Yeah.
And my parents looked at me like I was a Martian. He told me, look, you can do whatever you want, but my advice is you shouldn't quit. You shouldn't run away from your problems. Like, confidence didn't seem like a skill.
Yeah.
It seemed like a trait. You either are born with it or you're not. And I noticed a really interesting pattern. The longer people thought, the worse their answer was. Think about that. The longer people thought, the more thought they put into their answer, the worse it was. The only way that you get better is with training, with feedback, with practice, with a ton of mistakes.
Hi, and welcome to the I Love Success podcast. Before we get started, I just want to say thank you for deciding to listen to this episode. Thank you for making a conscious decision to be open to learn and improve in order to lead a better life. And even though I have a big mission to help at least 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams, right now, you are the most important person to me. I love meeting incredible human beings and sharing their amazing life journeys. My job is to listen, ask the right questions, and challenge the status quo. This week, I have the honor of sitting down with a man that struggled with self-confidence his whole life, until he began studying public speaking. This led him onto a path of self-discovery and forced him to grow as a speaker and a human being. After years of training, he coached Tristan de Montebello to become the fastest competitor in history to reach the finals of the World Championship of Public Speaking. Since then, he's been on a mission to help people transform their ability to speak under pressure. He co-founded Ultra Speaking in 2017 and has since coached the world's top athletes, leaders, and entrepreneurs to speak more effectively in moments that matter most. When he isn't working, you can find him freestyle rapping over hip-hop instrumentals in his car. Welcome, Michael Gendler.
Thank you for having me. Lovely intro. And it's very true. I always freestyle rap. Even on the way here, I was just jamming out.
And you know, Michael, you're one of those guys. I think we only met once, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, but I can't even believe that we only met once, because you feel like a friend. Mm. And it feels like you are kind, but the size, you're one of those people you just want to know.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll be collecting compliments all podcasts. So
yeah.
Keep them coming.
Keep them coming. Yeah. And I mean, let's start with like your self-confidence. And do you remember why you didn't have a good confidence? Because I think it's so normal. You know, we all of us go through that at some point in our life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was born in Russia. So I moved here when I was 2. And I think always I felt a little bit different than the other kids. You know, I spoke Russian at home. I had kind of like Eastern customs. And on top of that, my parents decided that I should skip first grade. And so when I was like 6 years old, I jumped straight into second grade. And so there's this, maybe it's an imposter syndrome or something, but I grew up always being the youngest in the class. And always having this shyness because I felt like, you know, everyone else is kind of friendly and outgoing and super comfortable. And I kind of felt like the weird kid, the odd kid out. And so I think that, you know, shyness is like a snowball and it just keeps building on itself over the years.
Yeah. And Michael, I read your book, your kit, because I got a homework from you.
Yes,
I love that.
Yes.
And it's so lovely when I get that. I always try to do research. I don't want to do too much,
right?
Because I want it to be authentic.
Yes.
And I want to explore new things, but I also want to know enough to be able to make this an amazing experience and to try to find things to talk about that you never shared with anyone else.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you mentioned there was that it was a moment where you bombed, like the stand-up comedians would say, in an important situation, you were kind of fed up with not being, not having confidence, not being able to speak under pressure. Can you share that moment and what happened after?
Yeah. So I was 21, fresh out of college, maybe a year out of college. I was already working as a software developer, and I had like recently got promoted to project management, which the ambitious side of me was like, yes, this is amazing. I'm moving so fast. What I didn't realize was project management involves a lot of presenting about things you're probably the least familiar with on the entire team because you're not in the code. And so day after day, I'd find myself giving presentations about things I didn't really know in front of people who were way above my pay grade. And at the time, like, that just was, I had so much anxiety around that, you know, I had work at maybe 10:30 was the latest I could go in. I'd wake up at like 10:07, you know, like get ready really fast and just barely make it every day because there was no reason to get up to work. I just had so much dread. Yeah. And I kind of kept at it, but every day was just sort of a punch in the gut of I'm really not good at this, until like that one day where I was in a meeting, my boss was there, my entire team was there, and I was just presenting to them. And I was speaking, and something happened where, you know the feeling where you're searching for the right word and you can't think of it? Most people would be lost in thought, and then they'll just be like, fuck it, I'll pick a different word or whatever. I froze. I just like silence.
Yeah.
Mid-sentence. And I'm just standing there in this loop of trying to remember the word, and then the longer the silence is, the more awkward it gets, the more I don't know what to do. And then finally, after literally like 10 to 15 seconds, my boss steps in and finishes my sentence for me, which doesn't seem like that big of a deal, and you could even say like he saved me, but I felt like I was just got humiliated. You know, here's this young kid who's not good at his job, who can't even speak. And in that moment, you know, everyone continued. I was still fuming in my mind. And then after everybody left, I sat down, I opened my laptop, opened up, you know, Google Docs, and I drafted my letter of resignation. I decided that's it. I'm not cut out for leadership. Not cut out for project management. Like, this is not, I'm not happy where I am. I'm not happy with this work. Like, why am I even doing this? I had a pretty big existential crisis in that moment. And so I remember I was about to send the email saying, hey, I'm sorry, but I quit.
Yeah.
But I called my dad, and my dad, in his infinite Russian immigrant wisdom, said, there's no way you're quitting a job. There's just no way you are leaving a well-paying, secure job for what? For nothing.
Yeah.
How are you gonna, like, what's your plan? My dad's very much like, what's your plan? And I didn't have a plan. So he told me, look, you can do whatever you want, but my advice is you shouldn't quit. You shouldn't run away from your problems. And that kind of stuck with me. And he was very much of the mindset of go fix whatever's bothering you.
Yeah.
And I think my dad is very much a person who believes that most things can be fixed.
Yeah.
So came back to my desk, plugged my laptop in, opened up Google, and I searched how to be more confident. First thing that came up was Toastmasters, which is a public speaking club.
Yeah.
And that's the moment that everything changed.
Wow. And I loved that you had your dad in that moment to kind of steer you in the right direction, right? And I think role models are so important if they're giving us the right advice. And the cool thing is when we face challenges, we all want to run away. It's in our DNA. It's fight or flight, right? And but when we stick around and we master or at least learn what we can't do, we grow as human beings. Yeah. And it's a confidence booster, right?
Oh my God.
So let's walk through like how did it change your life?
Yeah. Well, one thing that's important to point out is when my dad said, like, you know, basically go face your fears, go work on your weakness. Yeah. I wasn't like, yeah, dad, like, you know what? You got me fired up. Like, you're right. Yeah. Because at the time I didn't like confidence didn't seem like a skill.
Yeah.
It seemed like a trait. You either are born with it or you're not.
Yeah.
And if you go 21 years of your life not having it, how likely are you to believe that it can be improved?
Yeah.
At the time, I didn't even know public speaking was the problem.
Yeah.
I thought it was much deeper rooted, and in a sense it was. But what ended up happening was I started going to these Toastmaster meetings. And at Toastmasters, one of my favorite things that they do is they put you on the spot, just like in this podcast, and they'll ask you a question you never prepared for.
Yeah.
And at Toastmasters, the questions are just like, you know, all over the place. If you were president, what would be the first thing you'd do in office type of questions?
Yeah.
And I'd watch. I remember my first meeting at Toastmasters. I'd watch as this guy would come up there. He'd get faced with a question he's never heard before. And he gives this 2-minute speech as if he were Barack Obama working with the world's best script writers. I mean, he would just knock it out of the park. And I'd be sitting there thinking, like, I didn't have time to prepare. Like, why does this guy get a chance to prepare?
Yeah.
And the person next to me is like, no, there's no preparation. He made that up on the spot. And it hit me like, wow, that is a sorcery. That's wizardry to be able to do that in the moment on the fly. And then it was my turn, and I got some question, and I remember it went fine. It wasn't anything spectacular, but in the moment after I was done, I realized, I just remember the feeling of like, there's something that's fun about this. And I didn't know what it was yet, but I could feel like there's something about that situation that's fun. And the only commitment I made to myself, the only deal was, keep coming back.
Yeah.
And so I think it was 100 weeks in a row that I came back week after week after week, just doing these table topics, getting put on the spot and learning how to think faster, learning how to look more confident, sound more confident, learning how to answer questions strategically, creatively, all these different things.
Yeah.
No one taught me because Toastmasters is no teacher. I just saw other people doing it well and I started modeling them. Talking about role models.
Yeah.
And going, okay, I like how they did that. I like how they didn't answer the question directly. They started with a story.
Yeah.
Or I like how they started speaking, but then they totally pivoted towards something that they were more passionate about. And I would just pick up these little clues. And like with anything, if you're going to practice it 100 times in a row, something's going to stick. And so things began to stick. And the beautiful thing about practicing speaking, especially this type of speaking, is you can apply it anywhere. I started noticing that in meetings, I could hold eye contact more, to the point where people would turn away from me. And at the time I was like, wow, that was strange. Am I winning this eye contact staring contest that's happening? And it's like little wins like that in social situations and even at the cashier. I just felt like in these moments where I used to feel very uncomfortable in my own skin, I started to feel like I could be more, a little bit more playful, a little bit more creative, a little bit more just me.
Yeah.
And I think being more me was the essence of how my confidence started to grow.
I love that. And I'm just thinking about myself, because a lot of people, when they meet me and they don't know my story or what I went through, they think I look like a confident guy. I'm a martial artist. Yeah. I've been like an athlete. But I was a very insecure kid with no friends, bullied, chubby. And when you said those things that you can actually train that, I recognized that in myself, that just the eye contact thing. I remember when you wanted to attract the girls, you're like, don't break eye contact, but don't look so long so you look like a psycho, you know? So, but I just remember those moments, like the first time when you did that, and like they saw something in you that attracted them. And it was just because of this eye contact battle, right? And that gave you confidence. So communication is everything, right? And we see a lot of intelligent people that are not getting what they deserve, so to speak, because of communication lack. And then we see people that are better at communication that maybe lands that job where as they are not as qualified for it. So I think it's a communication skill is always great to know. And I want to talk more about how we can help the listeners be better speakers, especially on the pressure, because I like one thing that you said in your book, that it's the same thing as having a conversation, but we make it a big deal, right? Can you just talk about that?
Sure. You know, we say it in the book too, but imagine you're having a great conversation with a friend and you're totally in flow. I mean, we forget that speaking is a flow-oriented, subconscious process. We just do it. Yeah. We all know how to do it. Suddenly, imagine your friend turns into your boss or an important client right in front of your eyes. And your table turns into a meeting room or a boardroom. And suddenly, like, when your environment changes, what happens? You feel pressure. Right. And what I notice is that people perform differently under pressure. And why? That's really the question, right? Why are you doing something different when you feel pressure? And of course, there's so many reasons. Your heart's pounding. Why is your heart pounding? Because it matters. Yeah. Why is your voice shaking, your hand shaking? Because it matters. Right. If you think athletes don't get nervous before the Olympics, of course they do. They feel all the adrenaline symptoms, but they've changed their relationship to it. They expect it now, right? But of course, so we feel this symptom overload, our fight or flight kicks off and we think something's wrong. Why am I feeling this? And so part of our brain's actually battling this. It's just like, stop feeling nervous, stop this. I hope everything's okay. So we're just managing our physiology. But the other part is focused on outcome-based goals. I hope I make a good impression. I hope I say the right things. I hope I sound intelligent. I hope I look intelligent, right? I hope I get the client. There's all of these outcomes we want to face. So if you think about speaking, what's usually a very subconscious process becomes super conscious. And if you're learning how to speak and you're starting to practice all these things, well, you're probably researching online and you're finding tips like use open gestures, make better eye contact, alter your vocal variety, slow down, vary your pace. And you're learning all these things, but you're just adding to your thinking brain in the moment. It's like telling a driver who's very nervous, like a 16-year-old kid who's just on the road for the first time, and he's there 10-2, like shaking in his skin, and you're telling him, hey, make sure you check the mirror. Oh, by the way, did you look at your side mirrors? Hey, keep it at 10-2. By the way, turn the music down. Hey, have you checked the mirrors? And it's just like constant chatter in your brain. That's not going to make him a more confident driver. That's just going to make him more paranoid about making a mistake. So most people that we run into who have discomfort around speaking, who don't think they're good at this type of speaking, they're constantly on this fight or flight battle of, I hope I don't make a mistake. And so they do all these surface level tactics with their hands, with their voice, with their eyes to sort of put on a facade of a good speaker. They want to look like a good speaker. They want to sound like a good speaker. But speaking is a subconscious process. We don't think very much when we speak. So if you're finding yourself just constantly in your head about why you're so nervous or about how to make a good impression, you're doing the opposite of what is natural to you. So for anyone listening, the best advice I could give you right now is when you go on Google, don't type how to be a better speaker, or don't type tips on becoming a better speaker. The question we should all be asking is, if speaking is a flow-oriented process, how do we find flow in speaking, especially when we're under pressure?
Yeah. How do we do that?
We've discovered something really cool. When we first started coaching, Tristan and I, we would get all these people from all walks of life, like from teachers to people in the military to, you know, entrepreneurs, everyone. And they'd all have the same pattern. So we would put them on the spot. We'd ask them kind of like a table topic question, right? For example, my favorite one, I hate to give it away on a podcast, but I'll give it to you.
Is, your job is so fun.
Literally, we're in an empty theater room, 60 seats. We'll take the video camera out and we'll put the client on the stage. And for whatever reason, most people instantly feel much more nervous because this is like a one-take opportunity. And I'll ask them probably one of my favorite questions, which is, what is the single greatest invention of all mankind? Typically, we notice that the person on stage, they'll pause, they'll think, they'll sigh, they'll shift, they'll think some more, they'll really be up in their head, and then finally, they'll start talking. And I started kind of like recording data points and just making mental observations, and I noticed a really interesting pattern. The longer people thought, the worse their answer was. Think about that. The longer people thought, the more thought they put into their answer, the worse it was. Now, some of their answers weren't inherently bad. They were thoughtful, and maybe they were wise, and maybe they were even brilliant. But that brilliance was trapped in this air of uncertainty and hesitation. And you could tell, like, they weren't really speaking. They were more like thinking out loud the entire time. Like, they never decided, this is going to be my answer, and I'm going to go with it. So we started to get curious and asked ourselves, like, how do we get them out of the thinking brain under pressure? And what we did is we said, okay, you know what? I'm going to give you the start of your sentence. You're going to repeat the sentence, and then you're just going to keep on going. And they wouldn't know what the sentence is, and they wouldn't know what they would be talking about. But I'd say, okay, what is the greatest invention in the world? And your starting sentence is, here's what I love about. And so I'd say, what is the greatest invention in the world? Go. And they'd go, here's what I love about iPhones. And they'd go, huh, okay, now I'm talking about... And so then they'd start talking about iPhones, and we'd notice that, like, although it was more silly, although it was more nonsensical in a way, they started to speak better. They were more playful, more confident, more certain. They were doing all the things. Their body language started to take care of itself, and they'd find flow. And so we started to form this hypothesis of what if the enemy of speaking is thinking about speaking. And that's how we ended up creating a board game, a card game around helping people get out of their head and get into flow when speaking. And our entire philosophy, you ask, like, how do you get better at speaking under pressure? It's literally to jump into speaking.
Yeah. I love it. And I've had an amazing time with you, and I think what you are doing is so important. So I want to thank you for that, and like wish you all the best on this journey. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're gonna help a lot of people that can get that, you know, that extra touch in life, that extra joy, which you can get with communication. Yeah. And I have two more questions. So what impact do you want to have on the world when you look back at your life?
The first client I ever had, his name was Alex. And when he came to Toastmasters, which is where I would practice, he got put on the spot. He stood in front of a room of 30 people, and he made more eye contact with the floor than with the rest of the room. And when I got to know him a little bit more, I realized, like, Alex had the lowest self-confidence and self-esteem out of anybody that I knew. Part of it was because he was from a foreign country. He moved from Russia as well, but only recently. And when he asked me to start, well, actually, to be completely honest, I asked him if I could coach him. He was my very first client. And I felt this affinity towards him, like this knowingness that he has it. Like, he already has it. I see it in him. He just has to feel it, be it, experience it. Like, he has to tap into it, but he has it. And I don't know why, but I was so drawn and driven to help him with that. And so we started working together, and that was my passion project. At the time, I didn't know that I'd want to be a public speaking coach. I was just a mentor, really. We worked together for about 2 years, and then one day, Alex died in a car accident.
So sorry.
And it's just one of those things you never expect, yeah. Right? It's just totally just out of nowhere. But what I remember about him the most was that about 2 years in, he started to really shine. He would give presentations where, like, his humor just came out. I mean, when it was interesting, we'd go on walks and he'd be kind of morose sometimes, or kind of just, like, you know, himself, sort of introverted, shy. But when I'd see him on stage, he would just be big. He would be everything that I think he knew himself to be and more. And I remember the day that he died, I went into my room, and I always carry around, like, a little check in my wallet that is sort of my life statement, my life purpose. And I just made a new one in his honor. And it's a really simple mission. It's just to help as many people like Alex out there in the world as I can. And as I was reflecting on it, I realized that Alex is really me. He's who I was growing up. And in a way, he's all of us in some way or another. He's the great representation of someone who totally has it in him, but doesn't know it yet and feels too shy, too self-conscious, too low of self-esteem to really make the impact he wants to make. So he's the type of person that's just inspired me ever since I met him. And I want to continue to help people recognize just how confidence is something they already have. Speaking is something they already know how to do. And it's stepping into those skills with a little bit of training, a little bit of practice, but it's really to help people discover that they're so much closer than they think.
And thank you for sharing that. And I love that you and the people I get to meet on this podcast are so open with putting out their hand and, like, hey, I got you. We all need that at some point in our life, right? And if we can all help with that, the world is going to be a more beautiful place, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And also to do that work with a person that, just like Alex, he was shy. Like, you approached him, you did that. Sometimes we need that, right? Because it's a lot of times we give a lot of energy to the people that are, they already have the skills in a way, right? Yeah. Because it's easier to do that. Or they approach you, can you help me? But sometimes we need to take a look, and especially as leaders of the world, and see where can we make an impact, right?
Yeah. I mean, he gave me the greatest gift of all. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't have known that I have it in me, right? That I can help people and make an impact. And I learned more from working with him than I ever learned in the 3 years working without him. Yeah. There's something about, you know, in teaching we learn and in learning we teach, right? It's such a, it's just, it, the organism feeds onto itself. And I, when he wasn't getting it, I would get frustrated, but then I'd realize like, okay, well, I'm not doing a good enough job. What is it that I am trying to articulate that he's not getting? And that would happen constantly. And it forced me to really dissect, how does the brain work? How does the body work? Where does confidence come from? And it's, I think, through that deep self-analysis that I was able to learn about myself. And I couldn't have done that without Alex.
Yeah, that's incredible. And usually I end with the question, what would be the next step for the people listening to get closer to their dreams? But instead, I want to try something new, if that's okay with you. Because I know you're very generous, and you wanted to have all the listeners be able to read your book about speaking, but it's about owning yourself and having the courage and confidence to hack away the unessentials and do what you already know.
Yeah.
And that's what I love with you. It's similar to one of my idols, Bruce Lee. He said, hack away all the unessentials. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially, when I read your amazing piece, that's what you guys are doing, which is so brilliant. Instead of adding, you're taking away.
Yes.
So please just talk a little bit about the title in short, and we'll put a link so they can download it right away.
Absolutely. The book is called Own It, Secrets to Speaking Under Pressure. It's a book on pressure.
Yeah.
Most people will gravitate towards books on speaking, articles on speaking, and our belief is you already know how to speak. If you can do it with a friend, you can do it anywhere. But when the pressure changes, right, we talked about this a little bit earlier, everyone has a trigger where they feel like maybe they're not so good at this type of speaking anymore. Our intention with the book is just to do two things. Number one, it's to help you tap into the right mindset around speaking. And there's certain things that we've discovered, like your brain has this autofill feature, just like Google, where it allows you to literally speak before you think. It's like tricking your brain to get into flow. So there's tactical things like that to help you access flow quicker. And then there's also things you can literally apply in your next conversation that will not only make you feel more confident, but will make you sound more confident as well. So it's this mix of what we found with the people we worked with, the five, maybe six most impactful things that keep coming back to us as what, like, wow, this really changed my life. And that's why it's called Own It, because Own It has been the number one thing consistently that our clients come back and say to us, like, I've been owning it. That's the thing that's changed my life. And so in the book, we talk a little bit about what that means as well.
Thank you, Michael. And I think you're an incredible human being. Grateful to have this deep conversation with you. And thank you all that listened to this podcast. And thank you for being a part of the I Love Success community and wanting to create a better life. We are here to help you and at least 10 million other people during the next 10 years. Every person counts to us, and the only way we can grow our community and help more people is by you sharing this, giving us a review, come back to me with feedback. So please do all of that, because we're putting out all of this out here for free for you. If you want more conversations, there's almost 150 soon to be on ilovesuccess.co. You can get a couple of free chapters of my book, The Goal Book. So there's so many resources if you're ready to do the work. Thank you, and see you next week.